Thank you. I'm Michael Shinosky, as Tony said, and I'm here from the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And we've been working on a project on the thermal analysis of refrigeration systems for vaccine storage. And it's funded by the CDC, but we've been doing the work at NIST in Gaithersburg. So just to give you a little bit of background on the current problem, which I'm sure many of you are very familiar with, right now, the CDC administers about $3 billion of vaccine each year through the Vaccines for Children programs. And maintaining those vaccines at a specific temperature range is very important to maintaining the vaccine's potency. If they are allowed to go outside of that range, which in most cases is from 2 to 8 degrees Celsius, the vaccines can become ineffective, and over time, they become useless and have to be thrown out. A meta-analysis estimated that 14 to 35% of delivered vaccines are subjected to inappropriate storage temperatures at some point by the, during the time that they are shipped, delivered, stored at the clinics, and until they are given to the patients. And clearly, there's going to be a number of costs associated with improperly stored vaccines. You have social and economic costs. The cost of manufacturing and delivering the vaccine is wasted. The delivery to the patient is going to be delayed. The report of vaccination rates could end up erroneously high. As people receive vaccines that were stored improperly, they might not end up being protected, which that is one of the greatest health costs if people believe they're protected against a disease and in fact they aren't due to the vaccine being stored improperly. So just to sort of put that in perspective, if you have a $3 billion per year program, multiplied by a 30% known loss, not taking into account any unknown or unreported losses, that adds up to a $900 million per year loss in vaccines just due to improper storage. So clearly this is something that we need to address, and there's a lot of challenges that go into this problem and how it came about. First of all, there's over 45,000 providers that the VFC provides vaccines to, and all of those providers are subject to all different kinds of conditions, different budgets. You have large budget operations in hospitals all the way down to really small clinics out in the middle of nowhere. And so because of that, it's difficult to ensure that everybody's following the exact same policies and practices, and obviously people don't have the same storage equipment or budgets to have the same storage equipment. In addition to that, the suitability of commercial refrigerators, which is something that many providers use to store their vaccines in, that has not been well documented. There's been some studies on pharmaceutical purpose-built vaccine storage refrigeration systems, but not so much on the commercial refrigerators. Furthermore, there's the impact of refrigerator loading pattern. Normal refrigerator use in the clinic, such as opening and closing the door periodically, things like room temperature fluctuation, all these types of factors are things that stored vaccines are subjected to but have not been studied thoroughly at this point in time. And finally, you have the issue of inadequate temperature monitoring, whether it's due to the thermometer being placed improperly inside the refrigerator so that the temperature it gives is not actually reflecting the vaccine temperature, or you could have device inaccuracies, or even just an absence of continuous temperature monitoring. If you're just going in and checking the temperature a couple times per day, that might not give you the full picture of what's happening to your vaccine supply overnight or at other times when it's not being checked. So this is also an issue that we wanted to look at. And all this comes together, and basically we found that there's a need for research that matches the everyday conditions experienced by vaccine providers so that the CDC can come out and give good guidelines that are based on research that reflects what people are actually experiencing every day. So, and yet from this, we hope that we would get improved storage and handling guidelines and also improve storage and handling practices. So just briefly, I'll tell you a little bit about our experimental method that we used. We tested multiple refrigerator types, but we kept the same setup for each refrigerator. This picture in the bottom left shows the setup in the dual zone refrigerator freezer unit. And basically, we arrange 19 thermocouples throughout the space of the refrigerator and between 3 and 6 electronic data loggers. All of these sensors were calibrated at the ice points, and you can see the uncertainty values listed. And what we did is we tried to attach the sensors to all different locations to get a complete picture of the temperature distribution in the fridge. We attached them to walls hanging in the air, and most importantly, we attached them to actual vaccine vials so we would know the actual temperatures of the vaccines. And also we had some in bottles filled with glycol. And for each of our trials, we recorded data continuously for 15 hours to up to multiple days. The thermocouples recorded data every 10 seconds. The data loggers recorded data every 30 seconds to 1 minute. So all of that temperature recording added up to about 100,000 to 500,000 data points collected for each trial. So we got a massive amount of data of the temperature profile spread throughout the refrigerators, different locations, and all of that we were able to take and condense down into representative samples and averages in order to find correlations between the different criteria we wanted to test and the temperature trends that we saw. So the tested criteria, first of all, we performed all of our trials on 4 different refrigerator styles. This one right here is the pharmaceutical grade refrigerator. This one right here is the small dormitory style fridge, the freezerless refrigerator model, and then the dual zone refrigerator freezer unit, which in that one we only tested the refrigerator portion of the unit. In addition to testing the different fridge types, we ran through a number of different trials to sort of simulate the different experiences that people might encounter in their vaccine storage practices. So we varied the loading pattern of the fridge, meaning low density would be, say, at a time during the year when you only have a few things in your supply, whereas, you know, maybe a clinic gets in a large shipment of vaccines and they suddenly have to like store a whole bunch of vaccines in a very small space, and then you would have a high density load. So we did low, medium, and high density, and we also experimented with using plastic trays, cardboard boxes, and a combination of trays and boxes to store the vaccines. And finally, we tested water bottles placed in the refrigerator door to act as a temperature ballast against thermal excursions. And as I mentioned, we wanted to also test the normal use of opening and closing the refrigerator door, varying the room temperature, and simulated power outages and recovery. So getting into our results, this, sorry for the lot to look at one time, but this shows the temperature stability of refrigerators over time for each of the different refrigerator models. So each, in these graphs, each different colored line corresponds to a different sensor that was placed in a different location throughout the fridge. And the thing really to take away from this is looking at the first 3 graphs, the freezerless, dual zone, and pharmaceutical, the majority of those sensors stay within a fairly narrow range. And I labeled the red and blue for the 8 and 2 degree temperature limits. So for those 3 refrigerators, for the most part, the bulk of the sensors, and in particular, the sensors that were attached to the vaccine vials, stayed within that range. The refrigerators were able to maintain the vaccines at the proper temperatures. Now, there are some that have some thermal excursions, which I've labeled with arrows. In the first one, the green line that goes a little bit colder than the rest of the sensors was attached to a tray near to the back wall of the fridge, which we found that area was colder than the rest of the fridge. And in the, similarly, in the dual zone and pharmaceutical, the sensors attached either near the cooling unit or on the top walls tended to have a different temperature than the main space of the refrigerator. So that just means that you need to be aware of where you're storing your vaccines and also where you're monitoring your vaccine temperatures. The dorm-style refrigerator is the last one down here. And as you can see, it really did not perform acceptably at all. We didn't alter the temperature set point control at all during the course of this study, so all of this temperature drift happened pretty much on its own. After about 2 weeks, you can see the the dorm cell median set point temperature pretty much just dropped about 5 degrees. So clearly this is going to be a major issue if you're using this type of refrigerator to store your vaccines. And if you were to do that, it would require you to constantly be adjusting it just to try to maintain within that 2 to 8 degree range. So talking a little bit about the different criteria we tested and how the different refrigerator types compared. Starting with loading density, you can see here is an example of low, medium, and high density packing in the dorm-style refrigerator. Both the freezerless model and the pharmaceutical model saw little impact due to loading density. So you can pretty much be confident using one of those refrigerator types that even if you have a lot of stuff in there or just a little bit of stuff in there, it's not going to have a major impact on the refrigerator's ability to maintain the storage temperatures. The dual zone, we saw a minor increase in location-specific temperature variation at the really high density loads. Probably just due to the fact if you have more stuff in the fridge, it's going to reduce the air circulation abilities of the units. So, we saw more temperature variation depending where you're located. And then the dorm style, it was very pronounced location-specific temperature variation. And that's probably because the dorm style fridge doesn't have any type of forced air circulation. So you see pockets of hot and cold air. So for the opening and closing refrigerator door tests, we simply open the refrigerator door for 15 seconds at a time and then closed it and then repeated that at 15-minute intervals over the course of 2 hours. The pharmaceutical refrigerator, the dual zone, and the freezerless, all three of those saw little impact in response to the door opening. Both the dual zone and the freezerless, they showed small increases in vial temperature each time the door was opened, but overall it remained within the specified range, so it's not really something to worry about. The one interesting thing to notice, or to note, in the freezerless trial, we had one trial where we had water bottles in the fridge door and one without water bottles. And as you can see, the water bottles really did seem to make a difference in reducing the fluctuations from opening and closing the fridge door. So that's some evidence right there in favor of putting water bottles in the door to reduce susceptibility to things like opening the door and whatnot. Another thing to note about these three refrigerator types is that although the vials stayed within the specified range throughout the door opening trials, the sensors that were in the air, on the walls, or near the cooling vents showed much larger spikes in temperature. So that means that if you're relying on something that's placed on the wall, for example, to monitor your vial temperature, you're probably going to get a false positive reading, and it's going to tell you that you've exceeded the allowed limit when, in fact, your vials were safe. So it's just something that you need to be aware of when you're placing your temperature monitors. The dorm-style refrigerator, most sensors recorded brief increases, but overall the temperature decreased, probably in response to the fridge trying to cool down to compensate for the warm air coming in from the door being opened. And basically, the door opening just exacerbated already poor temperature control. We also performed a power outage trial. This graph right here pretty much can shows you what happens once the refrigerator is powered off. You have a fairly quick increase, but it's dependent on where the sensors or vaccine vials are located, how quickly they exceed the allowed limit. And the biggest thing to take away from that trial we found was that keeping the vaccine vials in boxes, original packaging, or trays, some kind of packaging, helped them prevented them from exceeding the maximum as quickly. And also, obviously, things that were placed on the top shelf, warm air rises, those items warmed the most quickly. And the water bottles, again, in this case, did provide some insulation from thermal excursions. And once you have a power outage, you need to allow at least 6 to 9 hours for the fridge to completely re-equilibrate. Defrost cycle is another thing to be aware of in your vaccine storage refrigerator. This graph here shows the freezerless refrigerator's defrost cycle, which would happen every 2 to 3 days. For the most part, the sensors that record the really large spike, again, are those attached to the walls or near the cooling unit, that type of thing. Although several of the vial sensors did exceed 8 degrees for a period of less than 15 minutes. The dual zone refrigerator also had a defrost cycle, and the vials in that case did not exceed the limit. But the biggest issue that comes out of the defrost cycle is the need for continuous temperature monitoring. Because if you're only checking the refrigerator temperature a couple times per day, chances are you're not even going to be aware that the defrost cycle exists, because you know you're only checking at certain periods of the day, and this is only happening for 15 minutes or so. The other thing that could happen is you might happen to check it right during the defrost cycle, and then that would give you a false positive reading that the fridge is too hot, or depending on where your sensor was placed, had a cool down drop of the sensors that were near the cooling unit, and you could get a false positive that way. So if you're continuously monitoring the vaccine and refrigerator storage temperature, you're going to recognize this as a defrost cycle, and you're not going to interpret it incorrectly. And the other thing to note about this, in the case of the freezerless fridge, when the vials did exceed 8 degrees for a brief period of time, that's something that people who are storing and handling vaccines would need to evaluate on a case-by-case basis. If every 2 days for 15 minutes the vials are exceeding 8 degrees, depending on the manufacturer rating for that vaccine, that could add up over time into making the vaccine ineffective. So that's something that people should be aware of as well. And again, placement of the temperature monitor is going to be very important. So looking at the best and worst, I guess, locations for storage of vaccines and refrigerators, I tried to show the green areas are the best ideal locations, and that would be in the center space of the refrigerator, contained in the original packaging, boxes, or plastic trays. And that's the best way to minimize susceptibility to thermal fluctuations. The top shelf of the refrigerator is an area to avoid if you can, simply because in most of those refrigerator models, they have the cooling unit in the top area. And so that means that if the cooling unit's coming on and off, there's gonna be more fluctuations resulting from that. And also in the case of a power outage or the door being accidentally left open, those areas are going to warm up the most quickly. The places you absolutely should not store vaccines are on the floor level and vegetable crisper drawer. And also, if the refrigerator has glass shelves, this one we tested had glass shelves, we found those to be 2 to 5 degrees colder than the rest of the fridge. So you don't want to place anything directly on the glass. Talking about the dorm style refrigerator, this is the same as the first graph that I showed you, but it only shows the vaccine vial temperatures. And as you can see, in the majority of the trials, in almost every single trial, there were some of the vaccine vials that were outside of the temperature range. We found that the dorm style fridge had consistently unacceptable performance regardless of where you stored the vaccines. If you place them on or near the floor cooling unit, there was even less temperature stability, but really we found there was no good storage area in the dorm style fridge. So because of that, the dorm style fridge is not recommended for vaccine storage under any circumstance. So talking about electronic temperature loggers, which is something that we tested to some degree throughout all of our trials. These are some pictures of the different types of loggers, and this graph right here is something that would come with the data loggers, a lot of them come with a manufacturer-supplied software, so all you have to do is pretty much plug the logger into the computer. You can start and set the rate at which you want to take data in the computer program, and then when you're done, you plug it back in and it downloads the data and gives you this type of graph right here. So I think the red line in this is the temperature, and this is just showing the defrost cycle over multiple days. So, and some of them, they have a probe that you can put inside your glycol-filled bottle and then have the readout unit sitting outside of the refrigerator so you can actually check it without opening. If you want to manually look at what the temperature is, you can check it without opening the fridge. So the advantages of using these electronic data loggers are that they offer, first of all, continuous monitoring, which ensures that all thermal excursions, all the different temperature behavior is going to be captured, which greatly improves confidence in your vaccine supply efficacy, because you know, you can say that from the time we put these vaccines in this fridge, this is what happened. We know if it went outside of the range or if it did not. So you have that confidence. The data loggers are really very easy to use. You can quickly analyze results. You don't have to write things on paper, and everything can be done electronically. You can archival data can be stored electronically, allowing you to look back at historical data and see if there may have been a problem at a different time. And also they have alarm capabilities, meaning that if the temperature goes outside the range, you'll get a notification. Some of them will even email you a notification that there's been a problem. So this just means that problems can be recognized much more quickly and as a result be dealt with much more quickly as well. And also some have wireless models, which would allow you to do real-time monitoring without, you know, necessarily even having to be on site. You could have a wireless monitor somewhere else. The main disadvantage for using the electronic data loggers is that they would require computer capability and some training if you were to implement that in the provider clinics. So to effectively monitor vial temperature, I kind of touched on this already, but it pretty much comes down to you want to place the monitors in the same areas that the vaccines are stored. Putting a sensor probe in a glycol-filled bottle is going to kind of match the same thermal properties of the vaccine vials, which are glass bottles with liquid in them. So the idea is just basically to match the conditions of the vaccine vials. This graph right here, the top one is just a 15-minute sample of data of the vaccine vial temperatures. And then, as you can see, these blue and green lines right here in the middle, those correspond to these thermocouples, which were in glycol bottles stored close to where the vaccines were stored. So that pretty much gave the best results. By contrast, the worst places to store your temperature monitors, this is that same 15 minutes of data, but as you can see, it doesn't really correspond to the vial temperatures at all. That corresponds to these thermocouples, which were taped to the walls, and got similar results for those hanging in the air. So just to summarize what I've talked about, the freezerless, dual zone, and pharmaceutical type refrigerators are suitable for vaccine storage. Their performance is unaffected by varying different packing densities or types, like boxes and trays and that type of thing. All of those refrigerators are able to withstand small environmental temperature fluctuations. I didn't have time to go into that much, but basically the pharmaceutical grade refrigerator was not affected at all by a small room temperature fluctuation, and the other two types showed an increase in temperature of about a tenth of a degree for every rise in 1 degree in room temperature. Furthermore, the water bottle ballast seems to work well in improving temperature stability under non-ideal conditions, such as when the door is being opened and closed or when you have a power outage or something like that. So it is worthwhile to place the water bottles in the fridge door. And finally, the best storage spots for vaccine vials are going to be in the center of the refrigerator and contained in either their original packaging, boxes, or trays. The dorm-style fridge should not be used for vaccine storage based on our studies. It suffered from severe temperature control drift. The lack of air circulation caused there to be variations in temperature based on the different locations in the fridge. And finally, the dorm style refrigerator was much more susceptible to room temperature fluctuation. And finally, continuous temperature monitoring is an integral part of effective vaccine storage management. Just checking it a few times a day is not going to sufficiently capture all the thermal excursions or temperature behavior over time. And the cases in which the temperature goes outside of range are likely to happen when nobody is there, if there's a power outage or something like that. So having a continuous temperature monitoring system in place ensures that you will be prepared to take note of these types of circumstances. And widespread implementation of temperature using electronic temperature loggers would be a fairly simple and inexpensive way to dramatically improve vaccine storage practices. And finally, it's important where you place the monitors and just try to make sure that the temperature monitor placement matches the locations and methods that you're using to store the vaccines in the refrigerator. And that's all I have for you. And thank you.